Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our conversation continues with Dr. David Blumenthal, National Coordinator for Health Information Technology within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Blumenthal, we've talked a lot about health IT, but I was wondering if you could help us understand what health information technology actually is. What are the key components of health IT?
Well, I'd like to step back and talk about why we should care about it. And then I'll get into the technology itself. Every doctor or nurse, anyone who works with patients, will tell you that they're only as good in their decisions as the information they have, as the information they have about the science of medicine and practice, and as the information they have about the patient who's sitting in front of them, what their conditions are, what their laboratory tests are, what medicines they're on, what their x-rays and pathology results show, and what their medical knowledge tells them about that. So it is absolutely essential to have the best information available at the point of care when decisions are made. Health information technology is just a way of collecting and moving that information around. It's what I think of as the circulatory system for information. If you think of information as the lifeblood of medicine, health information technology is the heart and arteries of that information. And as a physician, only as good as your circulatory system, spending $2.5 trillion on medicine and health in this country, we should get a lot out of what we're purchasing. How do we move information around? Well, you have to collect it, you have to organize it, and you have to transmit it, you have to receive it, you have to be able to understand it. And so there are lots of ways to get information into the electronic form that enables you to do all those things efficiently. I like to say that if the most advanced technology we had for moving information was a carrier pigeon, I would be all for more carrier pigeons. But it's not. Right now, it's like every part of our lives, the computer is the most efficient way right now that we have to mobilize and collect and use information. And we need to bring that modern technology to medicine. Right now, in our paper-based world, we're basically using the same technology to manage information that Hippocrates did 2,400 years ago. In the 21st century, for $2.5 trillion, I think we can do better. So what specifically are some of those technologies? Well, there's something called the electronic health record, where the data is entered. Your laboratory data, the physician's interview with you when you go and see him, the physician's thinking about you as a patient or the results of your tests, their prescriptions, what they know of your problems, your allergies, can be electronically retrieved when it's needed, displayed, and shared. Trick is to get that information in electronic form. The electronic health record is the set of software and hardware that makes that possible. Then there's the trick of moving it. So one of the things that's a challenge in health information technology is taking the information out of that record, packaging it the way you'd package a letter if you mailed a letter, sending it, and making sure that it goes to the right person. So what we've done traditionally in a paper world, if you were traveling, changing doctors, moving to another city, and you wanted your health record, you'd send a release to me. I'd copy it, put it in an envelope, address the envelope, put it in the mail. The mail would take it to the new physician. There would be an address, so you would have some confidence that if the address was correct, it would be received. If the envelope was sealed, you would know that it hadn't been tampered with. It would arrive at the physician's desk, and the physician would open it and read it. We've got to accomplish all those tasks electronically. So we need to put it in some kind of envelope so it can be sent, electronic envelope, if you will.
Standard of sorts.
Yeah, some standard. We've got to have a way to literally equivalent of the post office, which could be the internet. Mm-hmm. We need an address, and not every doctor has email, and not every hospital has an email for receiving health information. So you need a health information email. And you need a whole set of protections to make sure that no one opens it along the way. So all those are systems that need to be created and established and used. And a lot of our work is actually creating those systems on a model basis so that they can be used by private sector actors.
Dr. Blumenthal, concerns about quality, safety, and rising costs in healthcare have driven the federal government to find solutions to these challenges. To what extent is the National Health IT Agenda a response to this situation? Would you describe the benefits of health IT to both patients and public health in general?
Well, let me tell you a story or two. I worked in a health system in Boston that had a pretty good health IT system. So my patients had almost all their health information in the electronic record I used. And one time a patient came in to see me, and I decided I needed to get an X-ray of their kidneys, CAT scan their kidneys. There are a lot of reasons why you might want to do that, and I thought it was appropriate. So I went into the computer, and I had a software system in the computer that required me to, if I wanted to order an X-ray, especially a high-cost X-ray like a CAT scan, I'd have to put in why I wanted it. What were the patient characteristics that, and what was the information I wanted? What was I thinking about diagnostically? And so that X-ray, by the way, would then take that information, churn it around, apply some what we call decision support, and would give me a ranking of the strength of the indications. So was I on target? And it would, even I could understand the ranking because it was red, yellow, or green. And they added another piece, which is that the software would automatically look at the patient's record and see if the same or something like that had been ordered within a given time frame. And sure enough, after I order this X-ray, back comes the message, are you sure you want to order this? A similar X-ray has been ordered in the last 3 months. So I go back looking through the X-rays, and sure enough, it wasn't exactly the same X-ray, but it was something else that showed the kidneys. Kidneys were fine. I didn't need to order that X-ray. So end of X-ray, no radiation exposure, no money spent, no inconvenience to the patient, no loss to anybody, and a safety benefit and a cost benefit. So that little victory, magnified millions of times across the health system, could, I think, bend the healthcare curve, the cost curve, dramatically reduce the risks that people encounter in the daily care they receive. So I think there are all kinds of benefits from that. And just as another very anecdotal benefit, I was a primary care doctor. I had a group of 14 other internists that I worked with, and we cross-covered for each other. So on weekends, I would be taking care of all the patients for those 14 other physicians. Well, it was very common to get called in the middle of the night. With an electronic health record, I could go online with my computer and call up their record from home. I could see what medicines they were on, what other problems they had, whether if they were having chest pain, this is something that they'd had 10 times that year, or whether it was the first time ever. I could make much better decisions about that patient. In other words, I could give a better quality product to the patient.
So the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, also known as the Recovery Act, touches almost every aspect of the U.S. economy, and healthcare is no exception. Could you tell us about the healthcare aspects of the act, and particularly the Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health Act, or HITECH?
The HITECH Act, so-called, as you've defined it, is really historic legislation. It creates the possibility of bringing electronic health records to the benefit of all Americans. It uses financially two kinds of policy levers. One is increased payments for physicians and hospitals who adopt and meaningfully use electronic health records. Most of the money in the law, the so-called $19 billion, are in the form of payments that physicians and hospitals and other health professionals will receive above and beyond what they otherwise would. And the way they can get that extra money is by being a meaningful user of an electronic health record. One of the core and most powerful elements of the act is the concept of meaningful use. Mm-hmm. The only way that Medicare and Medicaid will give you those extra funds is if you can demonstrate to their satisfaction that you are using a computer in an electronic health record in a way that meets the regulatory requirements that the secretary is supposed to create. Recently, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services released a regulation in proposed form, a notice of proposed rulemaking, that lays out a definition of meaningful use and the rules that govern the payment for meaningful use. I personally believe that's an historic regulation. No other country has ever, in regulatory form, with that precision and completeness, said, in effect, this is what we expect of the most modern health information systems.
So if I can clarify, so this is increased payments for services delivered. It's not a penalty of sorts. It's more you're getting a premium for actually showing a meaningful use of a health information
record.
That's
right. In fact, there are premiums for the first 5 years. Mm-hmm. Starting in 2015, there may be penalties.
Dr. Blumenthal, the adoption of electronic health records requires a significant upfront investment. Few U.S. doctors or hospitals, perhaps 17 and 10% respectively, have even basic electronic health records. Would you tell us what are the significant barriers to adoption and the use of health IT?
The numbers are probably a little higher now. This was 2008 data. I think it's probably now closer to maybe 25, 26% for doctors and maybe 11, 12% for hospitals. The barriers are pretty well defined now. The first is money. The second is technical and psychological problems, fears of buying that providers have of buying the wrong technology or not being able to implement it. I would say a third is a lack of a workforce to support the implementation of health information technology. So the Medicare and Medicaid incentives are intended to deal with the economic barriers as part of high tech. The $2 billion set aside for us, the Office of the National Coordinator, are intended to help with the logistical and technical problems. And then there's also in that $2 billion a requirement for us to train new personnel. So I think the law addresses pretty directly what we have known to be the major barriers. Underlying all this is the difficulty of changing people, behavior, the way work is organized, the way people think about their work. So it's a big change management challenge.
Starting in 2011, physicians can receive extra Medicare payments for the, quote, meaningful use of a certified electronic health record. Would you expand on the current efforts to define this concept?
The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services has published a notice of proposed rulemaking in the Federal Register. It's now available for public comment. It defines meaningful use and defines the way in which it'll be measured, who will be eligible for extra payments if they're meaningful users. It does that for both Medicare and for Medicaid. It does it for regular Medicare and Medicaid, and it does it for so-called Medicare Advantage plans, managed care plans. It's a 500-plus page regulation, a big piece of work. The critical operational piece of it is a set of objectives, healthcare objectives, a set of criteria for what contributes to those objectives, and then a set of measures to tell whether the user is using the equipment in a way that's likely to meet the objectives. So, for example, one of the objectives is to improve quality of care. One of the elementary conditions for improving quality of care is to know who the patient is, know what the laboratory values are, basically have the necessary data. And so the first goal, if you will, is quality improvement. The objective is to have good patient data, and the measure that will be used under the rule would be to show that the physician or the hospital or the nurse is collecting the patient's demographic data, their laboratory data, their x-ray data, their pathology data, all those things that are needed to form a health record. And there are a series of 8 or 10 similar kinds of requirements. There are actually 20 for physicians, 25 specific measures, and for hospitals, 23 that have to be reported on to show that you're meaningfully using the electronic health record. One of the areas where I think the rule moves the frontier is also in the area of reporting on quality. Mm-hmm. So the rule proposes a whole bunch of quality reports that are needed to be a meaningful user. And that serves a lot of purposes, reporting on quality. The transparency of the health systems improved, the ability of physicians to compare their performance or hospitals to compare their performance or nurses, their performance with other professionals or institutions. And ultimately the ability of the health system to pay for value or pay for performance.
What about the National Health Information Network, or NHIN? We will ask Dr. David Blumenthal, National Coordinator for Health IT, when the conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.